From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSB, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf.
Heart's on the loose. You rolled him sevens with nine.
The film Crazy Heart has been nominated for 3 Oscars this year. Jeff Bridges for Best Actor, Maggie Gyllenhaal for Best Supporting Actress, and the song The Weary Kind for Best Song. It's a great film, and it seems like such a real-life slice of life that it's hard to remember that it all began with words on a page. This week, my guest is Thomas Cobb, who in 1987 wrote the novel Crazy Heart, on which the film is based. He's also the author of the short story collection Acts of Contrition and the novel Shave Tale. Thomas Cobb, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Did you see that on Amazon, a first edition of Crazy Heart is like $1,700? If you have a box of them in your attic, you're in luck.
Yeah, I keep hearing these stories that they're bringing outrageous prices. A year ago, you could have got that for about 75 cents.
Rats.
So. But we all missed that boat, I guess. Somebody didn't.
Well, how did a 23-year-old novel, you know, become a film in 2009? Did it surprise you that Crazy Heart suddenly had this new life, or were you instrumental in it happening, or what happened?
Well, I was pretty surprised. Scott Cooper had called me about 4 years ago and asked if he could option the film, and we had never heard of Scott Cooper, any of us. He was an actor. We knew he had been in Gods and Generals. And I sent him to my agent, and they worked out a deal, and things just sort of went along. I didn't hear back from him. And every once in a while, I'd hear something. I had heard at one point that he had Jeff Bridges attached, which was pretty encouraging. But his option ran out, and I was getting ready to option it to somebody else, and suddenly a check arrived for a third year on the option, and we knew something was going on. And about a month after that, I found out it had been green-lighted.
So there were other people interested in it suddenly?
Yeah, you know, there've almost always been somebody interested in it. Probably in its 23 years of existence, probably 15 or 16 of those years it's been under option.
Really?
To somebody, yeah.
Who else was thinking about making it?
Well, the first one, and the one everybody will know, is Chuck Barris of the Gong Show. He took out the
who
first
also
option.
Also might have been a CIA spy or something.
Yeah, or an apparently. Assassin, yeah. There are some stories.
Yeah.
But he was the first one to option it, and he held on to it for about a year, had a director. Things looked like they were going pretty well. And then he decided to take off and sail around the world on his yacht instead. And so that just ended that.
That was back in the 80s?
Yeah, that was back in the probably about 87 or 88. And then a cinematographer named John Bailey had it for a while. And he had a deal with Orion Pictures to make it. And Orion went bankrupt.
Hmm.
And let's see, a character actor had it for a while, couldn't do anything with it, so he ripped it off and used it as an episode of L.A. Law.
Which so, you were not compensated for that, then, I imagine.
Oh, not at all. Yeah. No.
And did you see it and say, wait a minute?
Yeah, I actually saw the previews of it and thought, God, that looks familiar. So I taped it when it showed, and it was remarkably close. So,
well, I guess
it's had a varied career.
I guess maybe people could say The Wrestler, The Wrestler is a very similar story, even though he's a wrestler instead of a.
It is a very similar story. I don't go into that much, but it's very similar.
Well, were you happy with Scott Cooper's adaptation?
I really was. I had nothing to do with it. I didn't know anything about it. I screened the film in early November in New York, and I was really moved by it. It was far more than I ever expected it to be. It was an incredibly respectful adaptation, I think. And he had kept the characters, and the characters were my characters, and I recognized the characters. And I'm still happy with it. I've seen it about four times now, and I like it very much.
And you thought the dude made a convincing bad?
Yeah. And I sort of knew that from even before I saw it. I had some contact with T-Bone Burnett, and he had sent me a video clip of Jeff and Colin performing. And as soon as I saw Jeff, it was shocking. I said, well, God, he is Bad Blake. And T-Bone had told me that it was that Jeff had just done an incredible job, and it was a career-defining role for him. And so I was kind of prepared for that, but it was really something watching Jeff Bridges mouth my words, and it really made Bad Blake come to life.
Now, when you were writing it, did you think, oh, someday this could be a movie? Or
well, I think you always think things like that. Mostly I was thinking someday maybe this could get published, because it was my first novel. But yeah, I thought about some possibilities of movies, and then when it was taken, I remember my agent and I sat in a sushi bar in New York and talked about people who might star in the film. So ICM thought it had movie potential right from the get-go.
Well, now, when you're a young man, like you were 25 years ago, not that you're not young now, but...
Yeah. Well, I'm not, yeah.
But, of course, 25 years ago, Jeff Bridges couldn't have played the part of Bad Blake, even though he can play it now so well. But how about you? How were you able, as a writer, to create this character that's, so world-weary when you were young?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that are going on. I worked as a country music journalist, and so I saw some of these people. And I was a journalist in Tucson, Arizona, and we were a sort of secondary market, so we didn't get the really big headline acts, but we got a lot of the acts that are a little bit like Bad Blake, people that whose careers aren't hot anymore, but they're still out traveling on the road. And then as I was writing the novel was my PhD dissertation at the University of Houston, and I was writing it under the direction of Donald Barthelme. There are some similarities to Don in the character Bad Blake, which I didn't really pick up at the time. They were the same age. Both had drinking problems. Both were trying to kind of rejuvenate a career that had been incredibly hot some time ago. And I didn't really think about it as being a related to Don, but it was, and he knew it. He would ask me questions about it. He'd say, just how good is this guy? I mean, is he a genius? And, he was looking for some validation out of that,
Hey, we're speaking with Thomas Cobb, and he's the author of the novel Crazy Heart, the novel that was the basis for the current hit film. Well, other than him, did you have a particular country music singer template that you were thinking of for Bad?
Yeah, I had a physical model for him, which was Hank Thompson. And Hank Thompson had been a huge star in the 50s and 60s. Wrote one of the real classics of country music called It Wasn't God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels. And I had seen Hank Thompson open for what I considered a lesser talent in an arena show in Tucson, backed by a local band that I knew, and they had just learned 2 days before that they were going to be backing him. And it just stuck with me as something. I saw it as just immensely sad that Hank Thompson had been reduced to this. And so as I was writing, I was often thinking about Hank Thompson. I was thinking about my view of Bad Blake before he became Jeff Bridges was Hank Thompson.
Well, there's a scene in the film where Bad Blake pulls over to the side of the road and makes a phone call in this antique thing that's called a phone booth. Those of you younger listeners, I may not have ever seen one. But it doesn't seem odd at all. I mean, it just really seems totally in character. But if you'd written Crazy Heart today, would Bad Blake own a cell phone, or would he still have to pull over and find an antique payphone?
That's a good question. I suspect he would have a cell phone. I think they've just become so absolutely necessary to our lives now that you probably can't get on without them. I'm reading the audio book right now.
You're performing it.
I am. Mm-hmm. And as I'm going back over it, I keep seeing things like that, and I think, oh, God, that's so strange that he didn't have a phone. You know, I had to go looking for a phone, and other things like that, see little signs of age around the edges of the novel. I think the story is still there, but there's some of the little details. The money is always off in the novel.
Oh, right, because it's not enough.
Right, yeah. He gets paid $1,000 to open an arena show, and oh my God, I mean, that's just... nobody would.
That's what the roadies make now. Yeah. Well, so I was thinking about this when I was asking you, you know, how you were able to sort of play the part of an older guy when you were writing it, and I, you know, you sort of think of the writer as somewhat of an actor, and now you actually are the actor if you're doing a audio book of your book, which is going to be what 12 hours long or something, and you have to play all the parts.
Yeah, and 9 hours long, but mm-hmm. but long enough, and yeah, I am playing the parts. I think that actors and writers are pretty close. I tell my students that of all the art forms, probably acting is the one closest enough to what we do, because to write, you have to become the character. I mean, you have to experience what the character is experiencing. You can't do it from a distance. You can't watch the character from a distance. So just like an actor gets into character, a writer has to get into character. So, you know, I have been doing this for, a long, long time now.
So you feel as a competent actor now when you're doing your audiobook?
I don't feel as competent as I would like. The voices can be tough, and, I was never trained as an actor. And my voice isn't trained, and sometimes as I'm reading it, I'm sort of watching it wander all over the place. But yeah, because I don't have that discipline that an actor has of knowing what to do with my voice.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to hear it. I look forward to hearing it. In fact,
it'll be out March 23rd. It'll be downloadable from HarperCollins Audio.
Fantastic. So now you have a new novel, and you've also published a collection of short stories. So you've written two novels. What's the matter with you, Thomas Gobb? I mean, James Patterson has 48 novels. What's your creative process like that it takes you so long to write a novel?
Well, I write slowly and steadily. I write 3 pages a day, and I generally write 5 days a week. And so I can finish a novel in a little over a year.
So there was
another novel that was written and rewritten and rewritten, and was written so many times that it just sort of died. So that took up a chunk of time between Crazy Heart and Shaved Tail, and then. Shaved Tail took an extraordinarily long time to write. It's a historical Western, and I spent a lot of time researching the army of the 19th century. In fact, I got so completely caught up in the army of the 19th century that I had to tell myself to stop, that nobody really knew anything about the army of the 19th century anyway.
But they will when they read Shapetail.
I think it's pretty accurate. So
when you say it's a Western, is it a Western?
Well, it takes place in Arizona in 1871. It's really about an expeditionary army troop down in the most remote corner of Arizona, of southern Arizona. It's got horses. It's got Apaches.
Guns.
It's pretty Western.
Yeah, sounds like a Western.
Yeah, it does. It does. I tried to deny it for a long time, but when you've got horses on the cover,
it's a Western.
Right. Yeah.
Were you a fan of the Western genre of literature?
Not really. When I was a kid, I read some Louis L'Amour, some Nelson Nye, a few things like that, but I was never a big Zane Grey fan or a Max Brand fan or any of that. Like a lot of people, I was pretty interested in what Larry McMurtry and Cormac McCarthy were able to do with the Western in the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to see the Western as perhaps a form that could do some of the things that I was interested in. So I decided to give it a chance, and so now I'm writing one now that's also pretty much a Western. It takes place in 1918, but it's in Arizona. It's based on a true story.
So the West was still alive in that.
The West was very much still alive. I mean, they were on horseback, and there were gold mines, and that sort of stuff.
But we're speaking with Thomas Cobb, the author of Crazy Heart and Shavetail. Are you a guy that has a lot of stories rattling around in your head and you just can't wait to get them out, or what?
No, I don't work that way. I always start out not knowing where I'm going. I start out from some little small idea or some little phrase or something. Crazy Heart actually started with a sentence. And the sentence was, "Bad's got the sweats again," and I had no idea what that sentence referred to. And so, as I started writing, I was really telling myself the story of Crazy Heart. And Shavetail began with the idea of a 17-year-old boy coming into the Arizona Territory from Connecticut for the first time and being exposed to the desert. So I don't have the things plotted out in my head before I start.
So it's like you're playing a little game with yourself, almost.
Yeah, well, I'm entertaining myself. I mean, I'm watching this movie or this book as I write. I don't know what's going to happen.
You don't know
next.
How it's going to end. You don't.
I never know how it's going to end, and I don't want to know how it's going to end.
Mm-hmm. And how do you know when you've reached the end?
It's always a surprise. it really is. When I got to the end of Crazy Heart, I just stopped and said, "That's it. There's nothing more to do."
Do your novels ever go in a direction that you don't like and say, "Wait a minute, let me reel it back in"?
Well, Shavetail did. That's one of the reasons it took 12 years. It wandered off into some back alleys that it shouldn't have gone down. And that's the risk you take in working the way that I work. But when it works, I think it works really well. If I can surprise myself, I can surprise the reader. And so I'm always working at surprising myself.
Well, now that there's been so much success with Crazy Heart, do you think that now, all the producers in Hollywood are going to be looking at your work and thinking, what else can we get out of this guy?
Well, that would certainly be nice. I would be glad. I haven't had any nibbles on Shavetail, but Westerns are very expensive to make, and in this economy, I mean, Hollywood is dealing with the economy just the same as the rest of us are. So, but yeah, somewhere down the line, I wouldn't mind seeing another film made. This has been a pretty wonderful experience for me. I mean, I wasn't involved in the middle of it, and I've been able to do the fun things. I went to the premiere, and then I went out to Hollywood for the Scripter Awards and doing interviews and TV spots. It's all been a lot of fun.
A little whirlwind of activity, certainly.
It really has been a whirlwind of activity. I talk about it as Hurricane Crazy Heart.
Jeff Bridges and everybody in.
Yeah, I've met the whole cast pretty much.
Robert Duvall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was one of the producers of the film.
He was. He and Scott met on the cast of Gods and Generals. Mm-hmm. Scott played his aide de camp. So Robert Duvall was the one who was involved with it first, and then somehow he managed to pull T-Bone Burnett in. And T-Bone Burnett, I think, did a lot of the maneuvering to get various people lined up for the films. In fact, T-Bone Burnett got Jeff Bridges in.
Mm.
So, because Jeff had passed on it the first time it came to him, because there was no music involved. So he met T-Bone sometime later, and T-Bone asked him if he was interested in doing the film, and Jeff said, well, there's no music. T-Bone said, tell you what, if you'll star in it, I'll write the music. So that's when they got Jeff Bridges.
Well, that's the thing. If you make a movie about a guy, a legendary songwriter who's written some legendary hits, then there have to be really good songs to make us believe it. And songs like, you know, Fallin' and Flyin', that's a pretty great song. Were you pleased with the songs?
Yeah, I love the soundtrack. It's in heavy rotation in my car right now. I play it a lot. And I keep changing. I started out with Fallen and Flying is the song I like the best, and then it was The Weary Kind. Now I'm really fond of Hold On You.
I've been loved and I've been alone. All my life I've been a rolling stone. Done everything that a man can do. Everything to get a hold on you. Done everything that a man can do. Everything to get a hold on you. I've been blessed and I've been cursed. All my lies have been unrehearsed. Wall of fire that I walk through. Only try to get a hold on you. All the fire I walk through. Only trying to get a hold on you.
Some of the loveliest songs are just kind of, you know, incidental music. That lovely song that Sam Phillips sang, Reflecting Light, it's just a sort of an incidental song in the movie. It's such a beautiful track.
It is. It's a gorgeous track. When we were watching the screening in New York for the first time, you know, I leaned over and whispered to my, is that Sam Phillips? You know, it's really wonderful. Yeah.
Will you get to go to the Oscars?
No. We weren't invited, but we had sort of decided that maybe it's kind of time for us to pull back on this, too. Uh-huh. We've been out to L.A. a couple times, and we've had a great time, and we're very grateful to Fox for putting us up and putting up with us. But yeah, it's kind of nice to just be home again and settling down. I'm looking forward to getting back and writing again, something which I haven't been able to do for a while.
Right, so you need to do your daily 3 pages.
Yeah, yeah, I really do. It feels very odd. It's long time ago I was a runner, and I would run 5 or 6 miles every day, and I got hurt. And when I couldn't run every day, it was just the oddest thing, missing it. And not writing feels very much like that. I really want to get back out there and, you know, get going again.
I've run 10 miles in the aggregate.
Uh-huh.
So far.
Okay, well, that's good. That's a start.
I think I might be done.
So, yeah. Well, I completely blew my knee, and, yeah. So
see, that's the thing. People are always saying that they've hurt themselves in some way from exercising, but never napping. You never hear anybody say they had a napping accident.
I know. And, you know, but people don't pay attention to that, do they? They go out there and exercise.
Well, we've been speaking with Thomas Cobb, and he is the author of Crazy Heart, the novel written back in 1987 that is the basis for the hit film that's been nominated for 3 Oscars this year. Jeff Bridges for Best Actor, Maggie Gyllenhaal for Best Supporting Actress, and the song The Weary Kind for Best Song. Although this year I understand at the Oscars they will not be performing the songs, which is kind of a disappointment.
Yeah, that is kind of a disappointment, yeah.
And he's also the author of a book of short stories called Acts of Contrition and the novel Shave Tale, and very soon you'll be able to download his audiobook version read by him of Crazy Heart. Thomas Cobb, thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you, Gary. I really enjoyed it.
Now that I've worn out the world, I'm on my knees in fascination, looking through the night, and the moon's never seen me before. But I'm reflecting light. I wrote the pain down, got off and looked up, looked into your eyes. The loss open windows all around, my dark heart lit up skies. Now that I've worn out the world, I'm on my knees in fascination, looking through the night, and the moon's never seen me before, but I'm reflecting light. That's
all the time we have for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program. I want to thank our guest, Thomas Cobb. He's the author of the novel Crazy Heart, which was the basis for the current Oscar-nominated film with Jeff Bridges. Thanks also this week to Randy Mott Cobb for her help in putting the show together. And as always, my thanks go to our From the Bookshelf staff, the lovely Miss Breanne Beal, for all of her hard work. Thanks, Breanne. Check us out on Facebook or find us on iTunes or check out our podcast page at KUSP.org. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.